This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. A 16-month house probe found that Google, Amazon, Apple, and Meta use their platforms to give their own products preference, often at the expense of smaller companies. Senator Amy Klobuchar has sponsored several bipartisan bills to address concerns about big tech, including the American Innovation and Choice Act. But that measure has yet to get a vote on the Senate floor. Joining me to discuss the legislation and its chances for passage are Sarah Morrison, a senior reporter for Vox's Recode. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay. And Dave Hatter, director of business growth for Intrust IT. Thanks for being here, Dave.
Always my pleasure, Lucy. Thanks.
If you have questions or comments, give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Sarah, let's start with you. Talk to us about how these major tech giants use their platforms to kind of dominate these vast swaths of the internet. What are some examples of some of the things they do?
Okay, so you have a couple of them. Something like Apple has been accused of using, like, you know, its control over the iPhone and sort of every app that goes on your iPhone. They have, I think, a 50% market share in the United States. So that's like 50% of people who have smartphones are sort of have their devices controlled by Apple. So they can have their own app store and nobody else's. So apps have to follow their rules in order to be on basically half of America's, you know, phones. So that's one. You know, Amazon obviously has a ton of control. It's both, you know, a seller and also operates a marketplace where third parties, other businesses sell their products. So they, you know, are in a very good position to sort of, they both control that platform. They sell things on it. They have a big competitive advantage. And then, you know, a company like Google basically runs the internet in a lot of ways. You know, most people use, you know, their Gmail, use their search, you know, use their browser, Chrome. I mean, that's just a ton of control over things that, like, a lot of us do every day. And then I the way that they can use that to sort of squeeze out other companies, allegedly, or, you know, maintain or build their own dominance is, like I said, set rules that other companies have to follow that maybe they don't, put their own products, like, over other companies just to, you know, give them prominence and give them preference, give them an advantage over others. So that's pretty much what we're looking at here and the things that this bill is trying to curb.
Yeah. And Dave, talk to us some more about the competitive advantages that these companies have. Sarah mentioned several. There's also Meta. Talk to us about some more about what their advantages are and how it affects consumers.
Yeah, I think Sarah did a pretty good job there. I mean, if you think about how a search engine works, even a local search inside something like the Apple App Store or the Android Store, it wouldn't be hard to change the algorithm so that your own products always show up first. The guys behind this stuff know that most people won't go more than a few links down. I mean, think about how when you use a search engine like Google, you're going to get the top two or three hits. You're probably going to click on those. You're not even going to go to the second or third page. So let's say, for example, there were some anti-competitive practices at work, or they just tweaked it in such a way that maybe it wasn't real obvious, Lucy, but it wouldn't be hard to push your competitors' products down in those lists, make it more difficult to find, less likely that you'll want to use them. And also, as Sarah mentioned, you know, while Apple has always been seen as pretty privacy and security friendly relative to their competition, they're also extremely stringent about what they'll let into their app store. Now, again, when I put my privacy and security hat on, that's a good thing in my mind. You're less likely to get some kind of malware through the Apple store than the Android store, generally speaking. But they also could create artificial barriers in there that make it really difficult for their competition to even get their apps in the store. So, you know, as Sarah mentioned, they have these giant marketplaces already. Same thing with Amazon, right? They're not only selling you products, but they control the marketplace that they're in. They could easily make it more likely their products show up. So that, you know, same thing with, like, Facebook Marketplace. Now, Facebook slash Meta is kind of a different animal because they don't really have products per se like some of these other companies do. But still, you know, they can control how things appear. When you get into the whole fake news thing, like what shows up, what doesn't, what's throttled. So they have a giant advantage in terms of being able to control who sees what and reducing the likelihood that someone would A, use a different product, or B, even be aware of it to switch to it if they wanted to.
And Sarah, before we get into this legislation, let's talk a little bit more about just how ubiquitous these platforms have become. You had a really fascinating article about Google in particular and how it's evolved from its don't be evil beginnings. talk to us a little bit about, you know, how far Google has come from where it started.
Oh, gosh. I know they kind of ditched the don't be evil motto a couple years ago. I mean, Google was a search engine, and you know what its co-founders did was they made just a really good search engine that was better than all the other ones out there. It had a different way of figuring out like which results would be better and what people want to see more. And then from there, you know, they were able to just sort of extend out to the rest of the internet. You know, search engine's kind of the front page of the internet for a lot of people, so that's a big deal. They introduced Gmail, Google Mail. They have, Google Maps, they have the browser Chrome, all of these things can feed Google a lot of data. And then also, they bought DoubleClick, an ad company, and they control sort of a ton of just ads, that are on various websites that you don't even know have anything to do with Google. It also, collects data from the things you do on those sites. So a lot of times you're interacting with Google and you don't even realize it. And I think, those little sort of things they put on websites, the cookies and things like that, those are just, I think at this point on millions of web pages, like, don't quote me on that. Well, I guess you will, cause I just said it on the air, but it's on like, just, I think it's on tons. It's on most of the websites. It's in a ton of apps. So you are, when you use the internet, you're interacting with Google pretty much almost everything you do on it. So yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah. And Sarah, what would this American Innovation and Choice Online Act do?
It does a couple things. The biggest one, and what it's sort of been called, the self-preferencing bill, is it tells companies that are, fit a certain, definition, which these big tech companies do, they have to have certain market cap, certain number of users, and be online. And they can't, put their own products over those of other companies unless they've organically, gotten there. So if people really like Amazon's, product, something Amazon Basics sells, then should be at the top of the results because of that. But not if Amazon just throws its products on the top because it wants you to see them, as Dave was saying. So they wouldn't be allowed to do that artificially. Apple couldn't throw its apps on the top of, App Store results unless they organically, got there. Google couldn't put, if you search for restaurants or just kind of anything on Google these days, you get this huge sort of, half the page is taken up with Google Maps, Google reviews, et cetera. And then other companies that also offer those services are pushed way down. So again, they wouldn't be able to do that unless those things sort of organically got that kind of result. And I think that's sort of the big thing there. There's a couple of things about they can't use non-public data that they get from other companies that use their platforms, to further their own ends and stuff like that. But the self-preferencing aspect is the big one.
And Dave, what is the impact on all of this for online privacy, specifically how these companies collect and use our data?
Well, Sarah touched on that a little bit. And in my mind, whether this act passes or not, just the mere fact that they're trying to raise awareness about this, the U.S. has very little privacy regulation. California has the California Consumer Privacy Act. But other than that, and some legislation moving through various states, there really isn't much out there. And I don't think the average person really realizes, as Sarah mentioned, how they're being tracked by these companies, not just when they're using their product. Like, TikTok has also recently gotten a lot of bad press. It's been kind of a privacy and security dumpster fire. I'm no fan of TikTok. for a lot of these things, now they don't have the same sort of marketplace heft that someone like Google or Amazon does at this point, although it's really popular. But, they're tracking you even when you're not using TikTok. If you read the permissions, they try to collect every single thing it can about you. And then there's been this recent research done by a guy named Felix Krause that showed that TikTok, as well as some of the Meta/Facebook properties like Instagram, Facebook Messenger, and Facebook, are basically, anytime you open a link, injecting code in their built-in browser. So they're not taking you to Safari or Chrome or something. They've got their own web browser where they can literally track everything you're doing. And there's even speculation that with TikTok in particular, they could capture every single keystroke. So, for example, if you enter a credit card number or a password or something. So, you know, in my mind, anything that raises awareness to the general public about the privacy aspects of this stuff, because guess what, Lucy? The people building this stuff aren't doing it out of the goodness of their heart, right? When these things are free or extremely low cost, it's because you are the product, not the customer, right? They're monetizing your data. There's at least 550 data brokers in the U.S. who are buying and selling and aggregating all this stuff. Now, you can get all kinds of different stats and metrics out there, and maybe Sarah will have some offhand. I don't know, but there's a tremendous amount of information that is being collected about you as an American, and it's being used in ways you couldn't possibly anticipate. Like, you go to apply for a job, that company may have bought one of these companies' algorithms that's going to look at your data and try to determine, would you be a good employee? So you may never even get a call back because of all this data these companies are capturing. And in many cases, kind of surreptitiously, as she mentioned, you're being tracked all over by Google and Facebook, even when you're not using their products, which I'm not a big fan of.
Yeah. Do you think the public is really aware of all of that at this point, or are people still kind of waking up to that?
I think people are slowly kind of waking up to it, but that's to a large extent because of the tinfoil hat nerds like me constantly screaming about it and saying, hey, you know, understand. I'm not saying don't use these things at all. I'm saying understand the trade-off you're making. These things really aren't free. And there are all these downstream consequences that you may not realize could be impacting you negatively. So, you know, trying to raise awareness, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it here today. You know, people, and there are ways to choke off this information as well. But the first thing is just being aware it's happening. And then you can decide for yourself, does it make sense to keep using this stuff? Yeah. My answer is no in most cases, but
And Sarah, just to make sure we're really clear, how would the regulations proposed in this federal legislation address that, address those privacy concerns in particular?
The privacy concern, I think, it's a little tricky. There is the thing about, you know, the companies can't use non-public data they get from like the third parties or businesses that use their platform to sort of further their own ends. So that's one. I think it's a little bit less direct in that anytime you have a law that sort of checks or curbs these companies' power or dominance, that means that they have like less, you know, they can maybe gather less of your data. They have less control over that stuff in order to sort of, you know, entrench their own dominance, use it. You know, the more you have, the bigger and more powerful you are. So if you do anything that makes that lesser, then conceivably we'd have more privacy, or just they know less about us. You know, and then there's also, you know, there's the aspect that, like, you know, some of these things, like Dave said, like Apple does a lot of things that sort of are good for our privacy, or that they position themselves as being good for our privacy, which, you know, we might lose some of that. So there's also like that aspect too. But yeah, that's kind of what we're looking at. I think that's the more indirect effects of this, more than maybe the direct ones. But Dave might feel different.
Well, what I would add to that, I agree with what you said, Sarah, yeah. But I would throw in there, part of that self-referencing thing is, you know, there are privacy-friendly companies like Proton Mail, okay? So instead of using Gmail, you could use Proton Mail.
Yeah.
But unless you know to look for it, you're probably never going to find it because it's going to be buried, you know, by the various search engines and so forth. And one of the things that got me interested in this bill in the first place was some of the more privacy-friendly tools that I like Firefox for Mozilla, Proton Mail, DuckDuckGo, or other more privacy-oriented search engines like Startpage have all signed on to a letter to Congress to basically ask them to move this thing forward. So when you get back to that whole self-referencing thing, right, if you're not even aware that these alternative products exist because you can't find them, you know, maybe they're hidden, let's say. Again, it's just speculation. I can't prove that. But, you know, there are alternatives, good alternatives for people to use, but the average person is not going to find them unless they have a nerdy bunker living friend like me saying, hey, get off of Gmail and use Proton Mail or something. So I think that's a part of it as well.
Yeah. We'll continue our discussion about big tech in just a moment. And later in the program, we'll hear about this year's Blink. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're talking about the federal legislation designed to curb the dominance of big tech firms with Sarah Morrison, a senior reporter for Vox's Recode, and Dave Hatter, director of business growth for Intrust IT. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at wvxu.org. Sarah, I apologize. I think I kind of cut you off a little bit right before the break, but talk to us about what kinds of companies this legislation would apply to. and what the big tech giants are saying about it.
This is, I think, market cap of over $550 billion. Monthly active users of U.S.-based, I think it's 100, it's 50 million, I think, so, and online. So this is basically going to be like Apple, Amazon, Google, and Facebook or Meta. And what they're saying about it is, you know, they have to say, present it in a way that, you know, customers are going to, you know, like, right? So they'll say, here, you know, Amazon has said, if this thing passes, it'll break the things that you like from us. And we won't be able to do Amazon Prime, et cetera. I think Google said the same thing. You know, it won't make our products as good. You won't be able to have them at all, whatever. So that's been their sort of thing, their pitch to customers for why you should say that, you know, call your local politician and say you think these bills are bad.
Hmm. And Dave, why do you think this has stalled? There seems to be such bipartisan support for this legislation, plenty of anger on both sides of the aisle towards these big tech giants. Why do you think this hasn't been voted on yet?
Well, when you look at the whole privacy and security space and various legislation that's been out there, you know, it often seems to stall, I think, because, you know, these companies have good lobbyists and very deep pockets and a lot of influence. And I think also, perhaps maybe a lot of legislators don't really understand all of this stuff and the potential implications for the average person on the street, including themselves, right? I mean, some of this stuff is hard to explain. I hear all the time, well, you know, why do I care about TikTok and my data all going to China? You know, I got nothing to hide. And that's fine. I understand why people say that. But at the same time, when these companies have these massive dossiers about you, I saw a story the other day that said, by the time the average child is 13, because in theory, a kid younger than 13 won't have their data collected thanks to the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. But there's all kinds of loopholes around that. One study said, now again, this is just one study, but there'll be 72 million data points on that kid by the time they're 13, thanks to all this technology. That's not going away. Storage has never been cheaper. So I think, Aunt Lucy, people still don't really understand the potential negative consequences of all this data collection, the power it gives these companies to influence you. Now, you know, Sarah made a good point in their retort to this. Yeah, if you do limit the amount of data they can collect, it does potentially impact their ability to deliver really super granular, customized, you know, personalized services and so forth. But, you know, again, tinfoil hat guy, I'll figure it out on my own. They can keep their personalization. I'll find what I want on my own.
What are the politics, Sarah? What's going on in D.C. that you think politically that's prevented this from getting a floor vote in the Senate in particular?
I don't know. This is a bipartisan support. It's in the House and Senate, and in both of those places, it's just waiting for a floor vote. And so Amy Klobuchar and I think Chuck Grassley both said, we have enough votes for this to pass. We're just waiting for, you know, Chuck Schumer to do a vote. And Chuck Schumer said, I'll do a vote when we have the votes for it to pass. And, you know, I heard, you know, this is going to happen. There's going to be a vote late spring, early summer, then late summer. And now it's kind of, I think, you know, it's not impossible, but it's pretty much too late for this to happen this session. And there's a lot of questions about the next one. So, you know, it's sort of, everybody's been saying it's the other person or you know, the whatever. And the fact is, we didn't get a vote.
Dave, do you think this has a chance of passing after the midterms?
My guess is probably not. I don't think we'll see it pass anytime soon. And I think that's partially why these companies signed on to this letter to Congress, is to try to raise awareness and get privacy-minded folks out there to start to contact their legislators. Again, these companies, super deep pockets, a lot of influence. You know, and when you get into the things they've said in the past, you know, they'll, in my opinion, say the exact opposite of what the actual situation is. So, I don't expect there to be any action on this anytime soon, but I do think it's an important bill. I'd like to see it pass. And if nothing else, at least the awareness that it's creating out there in the general consumer space, I think is good.
Yeah. Sarah, you mentioned that there are some questions about whether this could move forward, you know, after the midterms. Why do you think that is? Because there does seem to be this bipartisan support. I mean, there are so many reasons that Democrats are angry with big tech, so many reasons that Republicans are angry with big tech. Why do you think there's a chance they couldn't, unite behind something like this, even if the makeup of the House and or Senate were to change?
I think the big thing is, if it does change, you'll see Republicans want a version of this bill that includes things about censorship. That seems to be, for some of them, the only thing that they're upset about big tech for, is that they believe that their viewpoints, or you know, their constituents' viewpoints, are being censored. So yeah, any form of this, I think, would include that. And I don't think that would be as palatable to maybe Democrats as the current form is. So I think that would be the big sticking point.
Hmm. Dave, what should people do if there are people listening to this right now thinking, oh, geez, I understand this better thanks to tinfoil hat Dave here in the room? What should they do to kind of make their concerns known?
Well, obviously, you can reach out to your legislators and let them know that they should support this bill and try to get it called up for a vote. But the good news is, I think more people are waking up and realizing that the trade-off of your data for all of this so-called convenience and stuff isn't necessarily always worth it. And if you just go out and look at the letter that was sent to Congress by these companies, again, people like DuckDuckGo, Proton, Mozilla, who makes Firefox, if you just start to switch to their tools and you use their tools, especially if you generally run them in the more strict configuration, you can start to choke off the flow of information to these companies. So you can still potentially use Facebook, for example, through their website, but significantly reduce the amount of information they could capture about you versus like the Facebook app on your phone. So there's a lot of things you can do as a consumer that will help protect you, reduce the amount of information they have. Again, a lot of it's just awareness, Lucy. And if you just read the list of people or companies rather who ultimately said, hey, you should move this thing, and you start using their products, that would be a great step in the right direction above and beyond just reaching out to your legislators and asking them to move this bill forward.
Hmm. And Sarah, I assume you're going to be watching this pretty closely over the next few months.
I mean, if there's any progress, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. There isn't, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I've been talking with Sarah Morrison, a senior reporter for Vox's Recode, and Dave Hatter, director of business growth for Entrust IT. Thank you both so much for your time. It's been a fascinating conversation.
Thanks,
thank
Lucy.
You.
Thanks. Up next, Blink is back. We'll talk about what's new with the event this year and how there's a special focus on inclusion. This is Cincinnati Edition.